Welcome to Speaking of Business. I'm Goldie Hyder of the Business Council of Canada. Over the past few months, we've heard from many business leaders as they've responded to the COVID-19 pandemic. Guests on this podcast have told us how they've overcome unique challenges like keeping employees safe from infection, adapting to a work-from-home model, and finding new ways to deliver essential services. We've heard about the many ways Corporate Canada has supported communities through this crisis, from retooling factories in order to manufacture medical equipment, to delivering personal protective gear to hospitals, to donating time and money to local charities. The COVID-19 crisis has demonstrated how we can work together to overcome adversity. Today, in our final podcast of the season, we're continuing on the theme of leadership and resilience. But this time, the story is much more personal. 10 years ago, Lisa Lisson was named president of Federal Express Canada, the first woman and the first Canadian to head the company. She had worked her way from the ground floor to the corner office. But just as her career was catching fire, she suffered a devastating personal loss that would have frankly stopped many people in their tracks. Instead, Lisa channeled her grief into an inspiring memoir and has gone on to help countless others deal with life's challenges. I spoke with Lisa earlier this year before COVID-19 took hold in Canada. But as you'll hear in today's conversation, one of the hallmarks of true leadership is the ability to overcome setbacks. And that's a lesson that is even more relevant today than ever. I'm so grateful to Lisa for sharing her powerful story. Here's our conversation. Lisa, thanks for doing this. It's so great to see you.
Thanks for having me. I think it's wonderful that you take the time to do this and share the stories from CEOs and how they've been able to get to where they are. I think it helps people tremendously. So it's wonderful.
Well, we appreciate that feedback. I mean, ultimately, we're here because we want to shed some light on the life of a CEO and the journey of a CEO. So let's start with your story, because when it comes to interesting stories, wow, you know, I don't even know where to begin. Tell me a little bit, and I know we'll unpack this, about, you know, who you are.
Sure. So I am Canadian. So because I am the president of FedEx Canada, a lot of people think, oh, is she American? But I am Canadian. And
You're the first Canadian president of FedEx.
That is true. I'm the first Canadian president of FedEx. And in fact, we carve FedEx, like the world, into 6 regions. And I was actually the first female to ever run a division of FedEx worldwide. So something thank you very much. Something I'm very proud of.
Trailblazer.
Yes. And but I was born in Brantford, Ontario, and moved to Burlington when I was 5. I still live in Burlington, and I live very close to my parents. And then I went to the University of Guelph and got a degree in marketing. And when I graduated, I was very, very fortunate to get this job at FedEx, which actually will be 28 years that I've been with FedEx this year. And I started out entry level.
Tell the listener about how you started off at the entry level, because when it comes to, like, you know, cute ideas and perseverance, this is a good one.
Oh, absolutely. Well, so when I graduated, because I have a degree in marketing, I learned a lot about how important the company culture is. And in fact, the culture is even more important, they say, than the strategy. A lot of companies...
When that Drucker?
Yeah, a lot of companies, when they fail, it's not necessarily because the strategy wasn't sound, but they didn't nurture and enhance the culture. So I actually spent 6 months, Goldie, when I graduated, really researching companies and really wanted to make sure I picked one with a good culture. And I came across the story of FedEx. And it really intrigued me for a couple of reasons. Number one, the fact that our current chairman of the board and our CEO, he founded the company. And this is a true story. He was at Yale and he wrote a paper on the concept of why can't we move packages like we move people, and that whole hub and spoke with the airlines. He wrote this paper. He got a C-. They said this will never work.
Imagine what would happen if we got
grade. We wouldn't be here right now, Goldie. I'll tell you that right now. But what I love about this story about Fred Smith is that he had all these naysayers telling him this will never work. And one of the things that I've learned in life is that if you believe in something and you're passionate about it, where there's a will, there's a way, and it has to start from within, and believing is so important. So I read this story and I thought, wow. In addition, he was talking about the importance of culture. And way back when, he established the culture immediately with FedEx, which is people, service, and profit. And he says it's a three-legged stool. and that if you treat your people with trust and respect, they will then provide exceptional service to your customers, which in then will turn provide profit to your shareholders and allow you to reinvest back in your people. But like any stool, if one of those legs becomes out of balance, if you put too much focus on the finance and not enough on the people, the right. stool will tip over. Well, I was so impressed by this that I decided I have to work at this company. So I thought, how am I going to go about doing this? How am I going to create my own unique value proposition, which I teach a lot of young university students when they're going out in the world, you've got to find a way to make a difference. So I decided I was going to show up at FedEx. I researched who was the director of marketing and who was her assistant.
You would have been how old back then?
Oh, gosh. Well, that was 28 years ago. Yeah, so my early 20s. Mm-hmm. And I showed up and I went to the front desk and I said, is Peggy Toll here? And she was the receptionist of the director of marketing. They said, absolutely, we'll bring her out. She came out and I handed her my resume. I said, Peggy, I'm really interested in working at FedEx. Would you be so kind to turn my resume into Kathy, the director of marketing? Thank you for agreeing to take this. And I said, Peggy, she said, oh, it'd be my pleasure. And I said, Peggy, do you have any children? She's like, oh, I've got a daughter who was just in third year. I said, I hope when your daughter goes to apply for a job that she finds someone as kind and as nice as you are. So she took my resume in, and the next day, I sent Peggy flowers. 3 days later, the director came out to Peggy and said, I just got approval to hire a new entry-level marketing person. And Peggy said, of all the resumes, she grabbed mine and said, have I got a gal for you? And Goldie, that was 28 years ago.
Here we are.
And here we are.
Well, it's a great story, and I think it captures in many ways the culture that you spoke of too, right? Which
Indeed.
Is about and drive and that entrepreneurial spirit. Now, let's talk a little bit about Federal Express itself. Now, the FedEx, the company that you're responsible for. How many employees? How many packages do you move in a year? How many locations? Give us the data.
Sure, absolutely. So, for FedEx Canada, we have about 8,000 employees. We're over 70 locations coast to coast across Canada. And we're part of a global network. We are the world's largest air cargo network in the world. And Goldie, we move over 6 million packages a day. So it's quite impressive. We have over 400,000 employees worldwide.
Now, your journey hasn't been a straight line. You've had a lot of challenges and adversity in your life. And I want you to talk about the book that you wrote, Resilience, Navigating Life, Loss, and the Road to Success. And, you know, when we see that title, what occurs to you is that it's not too often we see in the same sentence, loss and success.
Yes.
Why did you choose that title?
Well, the reason why I chose the title for this book is that I had to learn through the journey that I, as you mentioned, it was not a very straight journey for me to the top.
Let's talk about that. And talk about the loss and let's talk about
the
success.
Sure, absolutely. So basically, as I was working my way up through FedEx, I became a vice president of marketing and customer service and IT. So I had a pretty big portfolio. And my husband and I, we go up north in the summer. We had 4 children at the time, 9, 7, 5, and 3, 3 girls and a boy. Yeah,
and the time being August 2007.
It was correct, August 2007. And we had just come back from the cottage. It was a Sunday, putting the kids to bed. And I wake up in the middle of the night to a very large
thud
in loud noise in the room. And my husband was not beside me, and I noticed he was on the floor. What we found out, he had suffered a heart attack. Luckily, we were able to get a pulse back. And I spent the next 2 years with him in a vegetative state, hoping for a miracle that never came.
So they tell you, look, he's likely not coming back.
Yeah, so what?
He had a living will
yes.
telling you not to keep him alive.
Correct.
And you went to the doctor. And what did you say to the doctor?
Well, when he had his heart attack, they said his brain was without oxygen for quite some time. Mm-hmm. So we're going to put him in a drug-induced coma for a week and then try and wake him up. So when they went to try and wake him up, he wasn't coming around. He was his eyes were open, but he wasn't responsive in any way. So the team of doctors said, there is no chance for a meaningful life. And he did have a will which said, do not prolong a life that's not worth living.
No one would assume he had, assume he would be 90 when this
correct,
will was
exactly.
Being
you know, you think we're not, 80, 90, yeah. But not at 38. And so I looked at this team of doctors and I asked one very important question, which was, do miracles happen in this hospital? And of course, Goldie, miracles happen every day. And they looked at me and they said, yes. And I said, then you hook them up to whatever you need to, because I need to know if I'm going to get my miracle, because he would do the same for me. And so then they hooked him up, and I spent the next 2 years researching everything I could regarding drugs to wake up the brain, so on and so forth. But because he was in a vegetative state, he became very sick at the end of those 2 years. And I had to make the tough decision to let him go. And that was August 2009, 2 years later. But what's interesting about this is a year after he passed away, I'm still heading up north to the cottage, but rather than just having four kids, I now have four dogs, because of course I had to get a dog for every child to bring some joy into the house, yeah. But a year after he passed away, I got a call from Memphis. They said, the CEO's on the phone. So I picked up the phone and the CEO said, congratulations. And I said, well, for what? He said, you're now the first Canadian, the first female to ever be president of FedEx Canada. And this was a year after my husband passed away. And you know what I said, because I went into complete shock? Well, aren't you going to interview me? Here he is offering me the position. And I said, aren't you going to interview me?
Well, I suspect your life's been that interview for them.
You know what he said? When I asked that question, he said, you've been interviewing for 18 years, because he's still a mentor of mine. And he always said, remember, every interaction with anyone at your level or above is a mini interview. Use that time wisely. Yeah. So when he said to me, you've been interviewing for 18 years, I remember that bit of advice he got me.
I think that's those are wise words.
Indeed.
Do the job you have and you'll get the job you want.
Indeed. Absolutely.
Let's stick with the adversity that you had to deal with at that time. So, your kids witness essentially and well aware that their father is likely not coming back. They're very young.
Very young.
Took a leave of absence, obviously, for a period of time. I think it was like 3 months
yes.
Or so. I think the question has to be asked, how did you do it? Because clearly the focus was on him and the kids. Who took care of you? How did you take care of you?
Well, first of all, I'm very blessed with great parents. And my mom gave me very, very important piece of advice early on. And she said to me, Lisa, you have to remember something. Life is not about what happens to you. It's about what you choose to do with what happens. And she said, although your life is spiraling out of control right now, remember you do have some control. You can control how you respond to this. Mm. And those were the most profound words I think I've ever received in my life, because it reminded me that I could control how I was going to respond.
When I was reading your story, I was like, boy, if I were her, I'd be feeling like, why are you picking on me, God?
Yes,
because
yes.
Because you, by the time you were 40, you had to do three eulogies.
I did.
Tell
I
us
did.
About those.
Yeah, so when I was in my last year of university at 21, my father, at 47 years young, passed away of brain cancer. So I did his eulogy. And then my best friend's sister, unfortunately, was murdered. And the family asked me to do the eulogy for her. And then when my husband passed away, I did his eulogy. So it really taught me, Goldie, how fragile this life is. That every morning when we wake up and we open our eyes, it is a gift, because nobody on this planet knows what tomorrow brings. Nobody. What we can control is the 24 hours that we're in each day and living with a completely grateful heart that our eyes open. And it is a gift. And so many people don't realize how precious this life is. And each day is truly a gift. And I learned that the hard way.
What led to you writing the book? Is it a liberating thing?
That's a great question. I get asked that a lot. I'll tell you what. After I got this job and people read the article in the Globe and Mail.
Yeah, I asked because I thought that's what triggered it.
Yeah, a lot of people started asking me to come to speak to their women's groups or leadership forums to share my story, because everyone has a story, a personal thing they're dealing with. Some are bigger than others. And it was through the encouragement of me speaking at these women's groups or speaking at events that people would say, you should write a book. And I thought, why would anyone want to hear what I had to say? Goldie, I put it off for years, and it was finally just kept coming. And I thought, maybe there's something here. Maybe I should give it a try. So I did write it. It took me 4 years to do it. But I'll tell you,
Were you in a good place when that happened?
I was in a good place, yeah. And it was very therapeutic for me because it allowed me to go back to those 2 years when he was in a vegetative state, when I was bringing him home every Sunday, to go back from a position of strength and reflect on those years, number one. Number two, I wrote it because I thought if I can help one person feel that they're not alone going through anything like I went through, would do my heart good. Number three, my kids started asking a lot of questions. You know, they were 9, 7, 5, and 3 at the time, and now they're 22, 20, 18, and my son is 15. Well, they're asking a lot of questions about, tell me when you first met Dad. Tell me about your relationship. How do I package that up, all those wonderful years? So I answer those questions, but when I gave them the book to read, they were like, oh my gosh, Mom, this is one of the greatest gifts you've ever given us. So I wrote it for those reasons, for my kids, for myself. It was very therapeutic and really to help others, because when you're going through a hard time, you feel so alone. And what you don't realize is there's so many other people going through exactly what you're going through. And it's comforting to know that you're not alone.
Yeah. Now you mentioned the sort of live 24-hour increments.
Yes.
And I know that that's one of your sort of 4-point plan.
Yes.
On steps to resilience.
Yes.
Take us through those steps.
Absolutely. So when you ask the question about how did you get through this, one of the things that I started when this first happened to me is I was waking up in the morning saying, I can't do this. I'm never going to be happy again. You know, why me? Why all those questions that naturally would come to you. And what I started to realize is that it was not getting me anywhere at all. Number two, what I also realized is I started to pay attention to the thoughts that I was allowing in my mind. And I was doing this. I was either waking up and living in the past, thinking about when he was healthy, thinking about all of those wonderful memories we had. And if I wasn't living in the past, Goldie, then what I was doing is I was immediately worrying about the future. My son was 3, and I was waking up thinking, who's going to take him to hockey practice? Who's going to walk my daughters down the aisle? They were 9, 7, 5. So I realized that I was not living in the moment that I had. So I learned that the only way I'm going to get through this is to only look back in the past for a life lesson, but to not live there because I'm not going that way. And to certainly not worry about the future, because that's wasted energy and it robs us of the moment we're in. So that's what I started doing to get myself out of bed. The next thing I started doing is to realize how powerful our thoughts are. I've come to learn the most important conversation we have in life is with ourselves. It truly is. We believe what we tell ourselves. So when I was saying, I'm not going to do this, I'll never be happy, Goldie, I was quitting before I even started trying. So I started telling myself, I've got this. Things are going to be better than I expected. And I also started saying to myself, if life can take a turn so sharply and so immediately for the worst, it can also equally take a turn.
Well, that call 1 year later
better.
For Memphis.
And now call 1 year later, prove that.
Yeah, it's a lifeline.
You know, it was exactly what I needed to help me move on with my life. So those are some of the things that I started doing, living in the current moment that I was mm-hmm. in, paying very close attention to the thoughts I was allowing in my head. And also, too, what I also learned, Goldie, is the power of gratitude. That was very profound for me, because what I started doing is, rather than focusing on his lost life, I started focusing on what I had to be grateful for, which first of all was my 4 children. He could have been driving me in the car when he had his mm-hmm. heart attack. He could have been driving our kids. I mentor a lot of widows right now, quite a few of them. They lost their husband before they even had a chance to start a family. So I started focusing on what I'm grateful for, not what was missing. And that's very important, that we live our lives by focusing on what we have and not what's missing. Because life is just too short. And as I mentioned, it's such a gift. We have to be present in the moment that we're in.
Well, you're the poster child for adversity building character. I mean, you took crisis truly and turned it into an opportunity.
Yeah. And also life lessons. Yeah. What I tell people is that in life, we have to focus on what we can control.
Correct.
And we have to let go of what we can't. And all too often...
Makes you sleep better, doesn't it? Because I have that philosophy.
Oh, you have
focus
to.
Focus on what you control.
Because all too often, we lose hours, days, weeks, and months focusing and obsessing over things.
Never mind the damage you're doing to your physical
exactly,
and mental health.
Exactly, that you have no control over. So when life forces hit me, whether it's at work or in my personal life, I say, can I control or influence this? If the answer is yes, I find out what it is. If the answer is no, I let it go. Say this, my three favorite words after I love you are, let it go. It's so important because it can be such a time waster. Yeah. So with Patrick and everything I was going through, I could not control it. So then what I started saying is, I cannot control it. I have to let it go. But what is the life lesson I can learn? I tell people both personally and professionally, when you have a life force that hits you unexpectedly, let's say you didn't get the job you wanted, the promotion, your partner, whatever, I always say, look for the life lessons and you will grow stronger. Mm-hmm. And that's really
and
what
fate, it wasn't meant to be and something else
it
is going to happen.
That's what I always tell my kids. If this didn't happen, it wasn't meant to be. And that's really the definition, Goldie, of resilience. Resilience is defined as bouncing back from a life force that hits you stronger than when you started. And how you do that is you look for the life lessons in whatever hit you, and you will grow stronger, and you will build your resilience muscle, which we are all born with.
Now, I'm going to confess to something. I grew up a big fan of the Brady Bunch. Probably lost half my listeners right now saying, what? You had your own Brady Bunch. You were living it day to day, except those six boxes were filled with six brothers, and you were the seventh, and you were the second oldest,
yes.
I think.
Yes.
What role did that play in terms of who you are as a person and who you are as a leader and who you are as a mom? And
absolutely. So, you know, I as you know, six brothers.
Yeah.
So I come from a very large family and I always knew I wanted to have four kids. But, you know, what I learned about growing up with six brothers is that I learned to have tough skin. Because with six brothers, if we were wrestling in the backyard,
you had no choice to be a tomboy. I assume
I had to be, a tomboy I had to keep up with my brothers. I always say that, you know, if I wanted to have a second helping at the dinner table, I had to learn to eat real fast because they would always beat me to the, you know, the seconds.
The meat would be all gone.
That's right. So I think just growing up with all these brothers really taught me thick skin. Taught me to, you know, suck things up and just not take things personally as well, and to be. Just to be a strong human being. And so I learned a lot from my brothers, and I think it helped shape who I am today.
Let's talk about your role now here. It's, I believe, 10th anniversary coming up as CEO.
That's correct, yes.
I want to ask you, because a lot happens these days, and it happens fast. Do you ever just look back and kind of think, you know, what a journey. Celebrate the highs, reflect on the lows. Do you get a chance to do that as you approach such a milestone like this?
I do. One of the things, Goldie, that I do that's very important that I will say I do today and also help me manage raising four kids by myself, taking care of Patrick when he was sick, doing this job, is that I'm a firm believer in carving out white space on the calendar. Firm believer, both personally and professionally. So what I did right when Patrick was sick is I knew that I had to carve out some time for me where I wasn't a caregiver, I wasn't a mom, I wasn't a leader. So I started carving out white space on my calendar personally, whether it's to, you know, go quietly and read a book, exercise. I mean, I do not like exercising. I always say I only run if someone's chasing me, but it's important to carve out exercise. I think it's good for the mind, body, and soul. But equally important, Goldie, it's important to carve out white space at work. So I carve out between 3 and 5 hours a week where I'm not in a meeting, I'm not on the phone, and I pause and reflect. I will look at, am I achieving what I want to be achieving with the company? Am I...
On your own you do this?
On my own, 3 to 5 hours a week. I'll reflect on the past meetings saying, because I, you know, my dad always said, we're born with two ears and one mouth for a reason. We need to listen twice as much as we talk. So I'll reflect back on meetings. Was I listening? Was I asking probing questions? Was I staying curious? So, you know, coming up to this...
It's a discipline.
It's a discipline.
It's a rigor for you.
And it's so helpful to get off the Ferris wheel of life to just, and you know what it is? It's resting our brain. You know, we spend so much time on
especially
our diet.
Now.
Oh, so much time on our diet, so much time on exercise. But the most important thing in our body is our brain. And how much time do we spend taking care of it by being mindful of our thoughts, by taking these pause and reflect times? So I will definitely have some good pause and reflection as I'm coming up 10 years in this role in September.
Well, you have a lot to celebrate, don't you?
Yeah, thank you. Yes. I'm grateful for the team because I always believe that as a leader, our title does not define us. It's an enabler to help others. Mm. And I'm only successful if my team is. So I am grateful for the past 10 years to be able to work with such a fantastic team. I will also say this. It's so important for CEOs to stay in touch with the frontline employees. I always say the best ideas truly do come for those employees that are interacting with your customers every single day. So one of the things that we do here is we do town halls twice a year where every single station across Canada, all 8,000 employees, have either myself, a vice president, or a director out in the field talking to our frontline staff. What's working? What's not working? How can we be better? They will share with us all the things that they hear and see, and we bring that back into shaping our strategy. So how we manage all of this change and uncertainty that's going on, you stay really connected to your frontline employees are the best pulse of what's happening in your business.
Tell us the story behind how you ended up on Undercover Boss.
Yeah, it's actually a great story. So when I got this job, the Globe and Mail sends out a reporter for new CEOs when they get to their position, and they go out and interview them. They just do like a little column. So they sent out the reporter to come meet with me and just a little interview. And as he was on his way out, he turned around and said to me when the interview was done, "Did you have any adversity or tragedy or anything happen to you on your way to the top?" And I said, "Well, how much time do you have?" Because my husband, as you know, just had passed away a year ago after being in a vegetative state. Well, the reporter came back in and we spent an hour together. And then the next thing that happened was rather than this little column, I made the front page of the report on business in the Globe and Mail. Well, because of that article, the people that produce Undercover Boss in Canada read the article and the story, and they were just negotiating to bring it to Canada. And the gentleman who was in charge said he cut out the article, he put it on his board and said, "I need her to be in my show." So once they got all of the deal done, they called me and said, "We read your article. We would love you to be an Undercover Boss. Would you please consider this?" So it was because of just me sharing my story of what I went through and my personal loss that really intrigued the gentleman that was responsible.
How did that go?
You know what? It went extremely well. My team really talked me into doing it. I'm very grateful. And I'll tell you why.
And you did the disguise.
Oh,
and
they did
the
a good
bit.
Job disguising me. My staff really didn't know who I was. But I'll tell you why I loved it so much. When I show up at a station and I'm, you know, I'll be in my courier uniform and I just want to walk the bell or talk to my employees, they're like, "Oh, she's the president. Oh, she's the president." And even though I try to be as approachable as I possibly can, they just see that title. What Undercover Boss gave me was I was able to go work side by side with my staff as a person to a person. They didn't know who I was, so it was I was able to really get to know my staff on a whole new level because that title wasn't there as a barrier, if you will. And that is the greatest gift that Undercover Boss gave
me. You didn't ask them what they thought of the CEO, did you?
I did not, but it was very tempting, I tell
I'm sure
you.
It was
very
oh,
tempting.
She's a piece of work, let me tell you. I think it's important that you know you get real experience because you can get into the silo and the bubble and you miss out.
You can't manage a company from the corner office.
No.
You just can't.
Well, it's a great story there. I think there's a lot of lessons that I think people will grapple with. Now, one of the things people are grappling with, especially CEOs are grappling with, and I touched on it here, is all that disruption.
Yes.
You know, from drones to artificial intelligence. How is this business going to change?
Oh, absolutely. So we're currently doing some pilots with drones on deliveries. We recently launched something called Roxo. It's an autonomous delivery bot, if you will, that we're doing some pilots in the U.S. to deliver in some residential areas. We are testing autonomous tugs in our ramps. We're looking at automated hubs, if you will. So technology, if you think about how much technology has changed in the past 5 years, I can't imagine how much it's going to change in the next 5 years. And those companies are not embracing technology to become more efficient, more competitive, are going to fall behind. So we're testing so much technology right now in the business to make sure that we can stay ahead. And also too, you know, companies have more data now than they've ever had before. We've got so much data. We have to find a way to use the data that's most meaningful to help improve the customer experience, understand customer behavior. So we're really embracing a whole new data strategy on making sure that we're using the right data to help make better decisions. And it's very important because you can get caught up in the paralysis of analysis of looking at data over and over again. So I'm really trying to gear my team towards what data is meaningful that will help us to make a decision. I call it the so what data.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
Why does it matter?
Yeah. And so it's really helping us. So don't bring data into the staff meetings if there's no
purpose.
And so it's very important. And that's one of the big things that we need to do to make sure we stay competitive.
You talk about the things that you know, you're doing to manage this transition and the disruption that's taking place. I'm wondering, given that you have counterparts around the world, you're part of a major global company, how is Canada perceived by others around the world? Are there advantages to being Canadian? Are we early adopters of technology? Is this a great place for pilots? Where do we sit in this equation that is FedEx around the world?
Yeah, so what I can say about Canada is we're certainly not the largest, you know, region for FedEx, but what I always say is we're small, but we're mighty. We're small, but we're mighty. And so one of the great things is that the team here in Canada is very long tenured. So it's almost like we're a family together. And so how we're perceived as small, but mighty. We have many different FedEx operating companies here in Canada. Mm-hmm. So we are a great test pilot to try new things. But what I can say is that we've got a fantastic IT team here in Canada. And, you know, with Toronto here and all of the great technology companies that have been established here, what we've been able to do is to create some applications that actually have been now being rolled out around the world. So we're
known, an incubator.
Yes. And what we're also known for is that, you know, we continue to win Best Employer Award in Canada. We continue to rank very high on reputation in the transportation industry. So we're viewed as being a very well-run company that, you know, like I said, we're small, but we're mighty. In fact, Canada was the first region to open up after the United States. So we, as soon as they got up and
running.
Seems
rather natural.
Yeah, they said, let's set up to Canada and let's get going up there.
I think you would agree that the one constant we're all managing now is change.
Yes.
And so in that, you know, rapidly changing environment, let's talk to young people, maybe your own kids. What advice are you giving young people today and how to manage and, you know, to get ready to identify the who they're going to give the flowers to get their entry job? What advice do you have for young people?
Well, one of the things I say, I do speak to a lot of young people, is that you have to create what's your value proposition? What's your own unique personal brand? So when you're going in to apply online for a job, try and find a way to do something to stand out. So phone the head office of the company, find out who the person is that you're trying to get the job.
Do some homework.
You
know, I still get Ms. Goldie Hyder in my letters. I'm thinking, throw that CV away.
Yeah. I get people trying to pitch me things, Goldie, and send me things via our competition. Yeah. To hear. So I tell them.
Well,
first,
I guess they got your attention.
They certainly did, but it doesn't go very far. But I tell young people, do your research, do your homework, try and find a way to stand out.
There's no excuse today.
There isn't. But also, too, I always say knowledge is power. And I tell people the power of reading and researching is so important. I teach my kids to read all the time. So whenever you're having trouble or an issue, there's so much information. You know, I always say Google's my best friend. If I'm struggling with something, I go to Google. The answer is right there. And so many people struggle with life on a situation or what they're dealing with, and they just need to go out and research, go online and find the answers, because knowledge is power and knowledge brings confidence. So, and it'll also help the younger people to deal with change. So if they're dealing with a rapid change of something that they're having a hard time struggling, go Google, how do I deal with change? What are the top three things that will help me navigate through this time that I'm dealing with that's turbulent? So that's what I tell them, is research, do your homework. Don't feel paralyzed in your own life when there's so much information at your fingertips to help you be the most successful person you can be in life. And that's truly, other than my mentors, reading and researching, planning, preparing, truly got me where I am today.
So what are you reading right now?
Well, one of the books we just finished, it's a great book, and it's called The Founder's Mentality. And it's a really good book. And what this does is that for big companies like ourselves, you know, we're the international market share leader out of Canada. So it's like, hey, where do we get that next bit of growth? Because when you're the market share leader, it's hard to find that next chunk of growth. And this is a great book. And it talks about, for large companies, or even maybe smaller, medium companies, when your growth is stalled, you need to go back to that founder's mentality, which is staying close to your customers, reducing bureaucracy. So it's a really good book that kind of brings you back to the basics of business that sometimes we let bureaucracy and a whole bunch of other things stall or slow down growth. So it's a book. And in fact, all of my staff is reading it right now.
You also mentioned mentors. Who are some of your mentors?
Oh, so I've got quite a few, but the gentleman that gave me this job, who's now retired, he's still one of my mentors. I reach out to him on a regular basis. Quite a few of the members of the business council I've developed a very good relationship with. So I will call them up and say, hey, I've got this issue that I'm dealing with. Have you dealt with this at your company? Katie Taylor, who is a great friend, she's chairman of the Royal Bank, as you know, and also she's the chair of the Sick Kids, who I'm a part of. She's a dear friend as well, so I'll reach out to her.
It's really important, isn't it?
That safe space. You need it. And it's just to just talk to people to say, I'm dealing with this. Have you dealt with this before? Give me your playbook. I tell a lot of young people too, and I did this when I was in trying to get into management. I thought, what is the one thing that I can do tomorrow that I didn't do today to get me to management? And I realized, well, why don't I go set up meetings with the current managers in HR finance and ask if I can buy them a coffee and ask them for their career playbook. How did you get to be a manager? What are the three things that you did? And Goldie, I've done that my entire career, asking people for their career playbook to help me understand how I can navigate to get to where they are. It's very, very important to do that.
And it often comes back to the basics, doesn't it?
It really does. So many people think things are so complicated.
Work hard.
You know, you work hard. And I tell people that what I've learned through all my mentors is the most successful people in life write down their goals personally and professionally. Then they talk about them with others. They carve out that white space to think about, what could I do next week towards this goal that I didn't do this week? And they visualize the
mission, vision, strategy,
100%,
execution.
But also believing, because if you don't believe that you can be the next CEO of something, it won't happen.
It won't happen.
You have to believe that you can get there, because that believing in yourself is one of the most important things you can do. Because if you don't believe in yourself, why would anyone believe in you?
You mentioned Sick Kids. I know you to be very passionate about philanthropy. I know the company to have a very strong footprint in philanthropy. Tell us some of the things that you and or the company are involved in that mean a lot to you.
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, I'm on the board of Sick Kids. I've been there for, I think, 9 years, and I chair the Human Resource and Compensation Committee. And I always tell people, including my children, if you think you're having a tough day, come spend a day with me at Sick Kids. It is grounding beyond. And with FedEx, we do quite a lot. We do a lot in terms of humanitarian. You know, we've got tragedies around the world, whether it's an earthquake here or that. We will donate our planes to fly relief goods in. It's something that we're very proud of. We work with many different agencies. We partner up with Tree Canada from an environmental perspective that we talked about trying to plant more trees, particularly, you know, a lot of the schools are just like the asphalt with no trees whatsoever for shade. We do another charity called Operation Warm, which provides warm coats to children that can't afford coats, particularly in our harsh winter. We partner up with Safe Kids. So there's many, many junior achievement. So like many companies, it's so important, FedEx believes, it's so important to give back in the communities where we work and we live and we serve every single day. So those are just a few of many of the charities that we're involved
with. I know you also care a lot about, you know, gender issues.
Indeed.
Mental health issues. What advice are you giving those that are dealing with some of these challenges? And how is it impacting you as a leader, given what you've been through yourself?
Absolutely. So I think it's very important for all companies, no matter how big or small, to have a diversity and inclusion committee, strategy, involvement. And that's something we're very, very proud of here at FedEx, that we have that. It's also very important for companies to invest in mental health initiatives. And we've really increased our focus in this area. For example, we partner with many different companies on this, but one of the things we've done is we've had every single manager and above go through what we're calling mental health training, and they actually have to write a quiz and pass. But we're teaching managers to understand that you never know what someone is dealing with behind the scenes, and to look for triggers. If someone's coming in and they seem off, just to say, are you okay? Is there anything that you need? So we've spent a lot of time and energy on mental health. So I think it's 1 in 5 Canadians is affected by mental health in some way. So it's very, very important. I think that companies do diversity, inclusion, and mental health. Those two things, as far as I'm concerned, Goldie, need to be just as important as the time you're spending on culture work.
Obviously, what you've gone through in your life has really shaped you to be who you are. How has it shaped your kids? Where are they? What are they doing?
Yes.
Are they writing books too?
My oldest daughter will be graduating from University of Toronto this year, and she's getting a degree in marketing. So just like her mom.
That apple didn't fall from the tree.
There we go. My second daughter, she is in her third year at Western in the MIT program. Very, very proud of her. My third daughter, she has taken a year off. She just graduated from high school last year. And she knows she doesn't want to go in business like her mom or do marketing like her sister. She's my little free spirit.
Found the rebel, didn't
and
we?
I sure did. But I think it's important to not force children into something that they don't want to do just because you want to do it. She's my little free spirit. So we're taking a year off to try and help her find her way. But we, as parents, we can't force.
I'd probably bet on her, by the way.
There you go. Everyone thinks she's going to be the most successful, is what they're saying. But as parents, we can't force our children to do something that they don't want to do.
Things are changing for these kids every day.
It really is. So now we're just looking at some options for her for the fall. And then my son is in grade 10, but I'm super proud of him. My husband was a very good golfer, and my son made the U19 golf team at Glen Abbey. And he is an incredible golfer, just like his dad. And I'm so grateful because he is the absolute mirror image of my husband. So I'm getting to see what my husband would look like before we met. And certainly as Jack gets older, just to see him grow. But he's exactly like my husband in every beautiful way possible. And for that, I'm deeply grateful.
That's very special. I can tell why you're so proud.
Indeed.
Now, one of your childhood heroes is your mom's grandmother.
Correct.
So if I got that right, makes you your great-grandma.
Correct.
So tell us about her, and why in particular did you admire her? Because that's a long ways from great-grandma to being a great-grandchild.
It sure is. What I admired about her, many things, but she outlived both of her children. Her daughter died of cancer, and her son at 21 died in the Navy, and he died of an accidental death on one of the ships. So you're not supposed to outlive your children. And she outlived her two children. But it never...
There's a bond of adversity, it sounds like.
There is. And it never stole her zest for life. When tragedy happens to some people let that consume their life, and they go from, rather than just living life, they're existing through it. She never did that. She realized, as horrible as it was, she still had so many things to be grateful for. So she also, at a young age, taught me about the power of gratitude. One of her favorite sayings, Goldie, was, "Onwards and upwards, Lisa, onwards and upwards," meaning don't look back, we're not going that way. So I learned some of these lessons when I was young, not realizing how important and valuable that they would be to help me deal with my adversity when it hit me.
What are you most proud of?
I am most proud of my kids because they have been pretty much raised without a father. And I do my best. You know, obviously, I'm very busy with my job. And I'm most proud of the fact that they've turned out to be fantastic children. I've raised them to be very grateful. I've raised them to learn about resilience, that things don't always go our way, but we have to look for those life lessons and believe brighter days are ahead. And I'm just proud of the wonderful human beings they've become. You know, they try, Goldie, to take care of me as much as I do them.
Can I ask you to end the podcast with the story of how you met Patrick?
Yes. I was at an all-girls school, and my parents pulled me out in grade 8 and said, we want you to go to kind of a co-ed school to try it for grade 9. If you don't like it, you can go back. Well, I was devastated because I loved the school I was in. It was very structured. So I went off to this co-ed school in Burlington, and I'm sitting in the classroom, and Patrick walks in, and I look at him.
Love at first sight.
It truly was. You know, some people believe in it, some people don't. Because I experience it, I believe in it. I looked in his eyes, and he looked at mine. I thought, oh my goodness, it was the butterflies. And he sat down beside me, and he kind of smiled. I smiled back. And at the time, Goldie, I had braces on top of braces, I tell you. And he looked over at me, and he said, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. He said, how did they get those silver things to stay on your teeth? And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm
only
devastated.
Only
a boy would ask that. And Goldie, the rest is history. Yeah. We were together ever since. And, you know, he had some adversity as well. His mother passed away of brain cancer like my father. Mm-hmm. Less than 1% of the population gets glioblastoma. I lose my dad, and then Patrick and I get engaged in the fall after university a couple years later. And then right after we got engaged, his mother gets diagnosed with glioblastoma. So I quickly planned a wedding in January. No one in Canada gets married in January, but I pulled a wedding together in under 3 months so she could dance with her son at the wedding. And then 3 months later, she passed away. So Patrick and I had a very special bond from meeting in grade 9 all the way up until he passed away. And I'm grateful for all those wonderful years that we spent together and the 4 beautiful children we had.
Well, I suspect he looks down on you daily and is really proud.
Well, thank you.
Of you and your family. You know, they say that adversity builds character. And you, my friend, have a lot of character.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Lisa Lisson for being my guest on this episode of Speaking of Business. As I mentioned, we spoke earlier this year before the COVID-19 crisis, but I hope you found her story as inspiring as I did. This wraps up our Speaking of Business podcast series for this season. I hope you've had a chance to listen to our other conversations. Search Speaking of Business wherever you find podcasts, or simply visit our website, speakingofbiz.ca, that's biz with a Z, to join our email list and follow us on social media. Until next time, I'm Goldie Hyder. Thanks for joining us. Stay safe.